Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
June 27th, 2006, a Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, the making of 30 miles east of L.A. Well, I am just in a great mood today. I tell you, we have published the featured artists in the Photo Mágico slideshow showcase. They're online right now, and I really, really encourage you to check them out because I tell you, we got quite a lineup for you. We've been working on this project officially since I announced it the beginning of May, and it ran from, in terms of being able to enter the contest, from May 1st all the way through June 15th. Of course, we had to do a lot of pre-planning before that to get the show ready, and then now I had a little bit of work to do after all the entries came in, and but I have everything all put together, and I have quite a showcase for you. And this is something that I think you should look at for a couple reasons. One, because you get to see all the different ways that people use this medium, the slideshow medium, to express their photography. We have stuff from how to do something like make French press coffee, which is what I would say a demo slideshow. We have something where I have a series of shots from a photo assignment, a night of amateur fighting in Texas. I have stuff from travel, all sorts of stuff from travel. I have one photographer who put together a portfolio of studio portraits and made a slideshow out of that. So you have all these different manifestations, these different uses for this medium. And I think it's really exciting to look at them all and to think about them and to say, you know, what kind of stuff should I be doing with my photos? Are my photos just sitting there on my hard drive doing nothing? Or can I make something really fabulous out of them? And I hope you be thinking about that. You be thinking about that. Where do I come from? I hope you will think about that as you look at these featured artists in the showcase. Now, one of the things that became clear to me from the get-go on this was that the members of our virtual camera club called The Digital Story, they were not going to let me off the hook in terms of entering a slideshow myself. And there's nothing wrong with that. And this is something that I like about this crew that listen to the podcast and contribute photos and all that sort of stuff, is that we really are all in this together, including me. And so I kind of like making slideshows a little bit. So it wasn't really a horrible sort of demand. But at the same time, while I was doing all the logistical stuff to make the showcase happen, I had to sit down and take some time to do the artistic stuff. And that's exactly what I did. And the movie that I have in there is called 30 Miles East of L.A. And I'm going to talk about it a little bit today because it's sort of a fascinating project. The reason why it's interesting to me is because 30 Miles East of L.A., it's all of 2 minutes and 18 seconds long. But yet, it's a project that spans 2 years, a little bit over, a hair over 2 years, and touches on a lot of aspects of digital photography and digital music for that matter. And because that all these different things had to happen in order for this little 2-minute movie to make it into the Photo Mágico slideshow showcase, I thought, well, you know, it's really worth talking about because there are a lot of concepts here that really kind of affect all of our lives as artists and digital archivists and, you know, people with computers and microphones and scanners. So let me start out just telling you a little bit about the gist of the movie. First, I really encourage you to watch it because all of this will make a lot more sense if you actually see the movie. And seriously, 2 minutes and 18 seconds, and it goes fast. Well, hopefully it goes fast. So the gist of it is that in the early 1980s, I lived in Southern California, and I was in a rock band. I was in a garage band. The difference being then, this was the sort of new wave movement was going on. There was a lot of bands like X and Tom Petty and The Police, The Clash. I could go on and on. And these bands were actually playing a lot in Los Angeles. And Los Angeles was really a hotbed for this type of music. What was neat about it, though, even though we didn't live in Los Angeles, we lived 30 miles east of L.A. in the Inland Empire, that this whole movement sort of spread outwards, has spread into the valleys. And bands like our band, which was called Section 8, that, you know, we played this kind of music too. It was very infectious. And suddenly there was this whole environment, and we had places to play. We had nightclubs to do gigs at. We were a really busy band, and there was a bunch of other bands like us at that time. And it was sort of a magical period in music where garage bands had all these nightclubs to play at and had all these followings and had a really great time. So I started the band with another guy named John Huber. We met, one of us posted, I think John did, posted a little classified on the cork board at the local music store. I believe it was Ontario Music. And I answered it. I think that's the way it went. It might have been the other way around. I'm not sure. And we got together. John was a guitarist, a really good guitarist. He played both rhythm and lead. I was a really mediocre guitarist that played rhythm only, but we both wrote music, and we thought, wow, you know, it'd be really great. Both of us really wanted to start a band where we wrote our own music and, you know, just, you know, expressed all that stuff that was inside of us. So we started this band called Section 8. We got a lead singer. His name was Mike Manville. He's still around. And went through a succession of drummers, which really isn't that unusual in the rock band game. Being who I am, I was the principal archivist of the band. And of course, we weren't really even thinking in terms of archiving then. I just happened to be the guy who quietly gathered stuff as it was happening. So I saved the handbills that we used to go staple on telephone poles all over town, telling people where we were going to play next. I kept a scrapbook and had various photos and stuff. We would do, you know, we'd have someone come over and take shots of us acting like rock stars. So, you know, I hung on to that stuff. And then I was also the keeper of a lot of the audio tapes. And we had different types of audio tapes. We had a reel-to-reel tape that was a semi-master that we had recorded in the studio. And so we had, I think, like six studio songs that made our demo tape. And I had a reel-to-reel quasi-master of that. And then we had a bunch of cassette tapes where we would just stick some crappy cassette player up in the back of the room when we did gigs or when we were playing at our studio called the Rubber Stamp. And we just let it run. And so we had various tapes, and they were spread all over the place, but I managed to grab a handful of them over the years. In 2004, I remember I read an article about the longevity, I should say, of audio tape. And it was saying, you know, that audio tape that's fairly well-preserved, that was fairly high-quality tape, can go about 20 years. And then a lot of times it starts to fall apart. There'll be parts, there'll be dropouts that we call, or sometimes the tape itself will just not play anything anymore. So I was reading this article and I was sort of thinking about stuff. And then I was sort of thinking about Section 8 and I was sort of thinking about when we played. And suddenly it was like, oh man, 1982, 1983, it's 2004. And so I went scavenging and dug out all the tapes, all the Section 8 tapes I could find, and nervously played them. And now the cassette tapes actually had begun to suffer. And so there were some tapes that didn't have anything on them and other tapes that, you know, weren't very good. Fortunately, there were a few tapes that were hanging in there. So I knew I had some cassette tapes. And then I had this reel-to-reel. Well, I didn't have a reel-to-reel player. Nobody in 2004 really has a reel-to-reel player. So I didn't know how good this tape was. So I asked around. Finally got my hands on a reel-to-reel player that I could borrow. I had to kind of clean it up first. Got it in decent shape. Put the tape on there. And fortunately, the audio sounded pretty good. So I was going, you know what? I've got to digitize this right away before, you know, I lose any more music here. So I started this whole digitizing process, and I managed to digitize all of the reel-to-reel tape, which was a demo that we had done in the studio. I believe we had 6 songs. One of the songs is basically my favorite, which is 30 Miles East of L.A., that John Huber, our lead guitarist, the guy that I started the band with, he wrote that song. And it's a fabulous song. And then I was able to salvage various parts from the cassette tape. And I got all this stuff. I believe I used some Griffin equipment. Even in 2004, the audio interfaces weren't nearly as good as they are right now. But I managed to piece together some audio interfaces and a little bit of software, and got the tapes and got them on the computer, and they were in pretty good shape. I was pretty happy with it. It was a project into itself, though. Once I had this music, I began to think about stuff to do with it, and I go, you know, I'd really like to talk to John again. John, I was pretty sure, was still in Southern California. I had moved to Northern California in 1989. So I hadn't been in touch with him since I left the band. So I started hunting around, and I managed to locate John. Fortunately, he was a graphic designer with his own business. So it was not too hard to find him. And we started talking on AIM, on Instant Messenger, and I told him about what I had done and what I was working on. And he had me send him a CD of the stuff, and he was pretty thrilled about it because he hadn't listened to that music, you know, for a long time himself. It had been 20 years since he had listened to it. Now, John is still a musician and still plays in bands and so forth, but his Section 8 days were well behind him, and it was kind of nostalgic to hear the stuff again. As John and I reminisced after listening to the music, I thought, you know, this would be a nice short movie, and I liked doing movies. I actually had called them digital stories for a long time, a term that I picked up from my mentor, Dana Atchley, who I thought was, you know, sort of one of the early digital storytellers, and who taught me a lot about digital storytelling. So I had been making these 2 and 3 and 4 minute movies for a long time, and I thought, boy, this would be a great subject if I could get my hands on enough visuals. So now the next phase of the project began. What do I have here, and what can I get in order to, you know, have enough visuals to go with the music to make a little movie? I had a lot of handbills, and they're really neat. John, being a graphic designer, had designed them himself, and they were really cool, and I hung on to them because I always thought they were great to look at. So I had a whole number of those, and I had shots that we had taken in the studio, you know, sort of setup shots, you know, like posing, like aren't we cool rock band kind of shots, but I didn't have any action stuff at all. So John and I were talking. He says, well, I think I might have some stuff, and he started digging around in old trunks and asking around and stuff, and we managed to come up with a couple shots of us while we were actually playing at this nightclub, which was our favorite nightclub, called the Rock Palace. Now, these shots were gold, and you know, I'm really thankful for John for scanning them and sending them up to me, because they were sort of the missing piece. Now I had these handbills, I had still shots, and I had action shots, and I'm thinking, you know, I could put together something pretty decent here. as I continue to think about it, I go, you know, what would be really neat is I wonder how the Rock Palace looks these days. Is it still around? Is the building still there? I mean, this was a place where we spent night after night after night playing. We got a cut of the door. It was people would just come. They knew that we were going to be there half the time. We were one of the most featured bands at this nightclub. You know, I mean, this is a huge chunk of my life. So, you know, as I was talking to John Iam, who was still in the area, he said, you know, I asked him, I go, is the Rock Palace still there? Is the studio where we used to practice, which was called the Rubber Stamp, because in a prior life, it had been a rubber stamp place where you'd go and order rubber stamps and stuff. He said that they were both there, but, you know, they were something else now. So in December of 2004, I decided to go down to Southern California and gave me a chance to visit family that I had down there and go and photograph the Rock Palace and the Rubber Stamp and shoot some LA scenes and kind of get some footage for this project. So when I got back home from that trip, I had a pretty good collection of material. So then the next part really was, you know, well, what's the story? How am I going to tell the story? And one of the themes that surfaced as I was thinking about this was, you know, going back to this whole issue about the audio tapes that could have gone away had I not digitized them in time. And I was thinking, you know, everything else about Section 8 had sort of faded away, except for the music that I had saved, and it sounded great. And so the music sort of was able to live on. And then when the Photomagical Slideshow Showcase thing came up, I go, here we go. This is the time to finally finish this project and get it out there. But I did want to take just a few minutes to talk about how I put it together, some of the actual production behind it, because that part I think would be of interest to you as you think about the projects that you're going to work on. I started my work in Photomagico, and it's a great tool for building slideshows. One of the things I like about it, it's really good for storyboarding. So, you know, I had all my photos, all my source material in iPhoto, and Photomagico can read my iPhoto libraries, and I sort of laid out the story that I had in mind on the Photomagico timeline. Once I got the story in place, then I start playing a little bit with, you know, the motion graphics, some panning and some zooming, mainly just to, you know, kind of keep the thing moving so it wasn't too static, it wasn't too boring, because, you know, we are dealing with still photos, and so I wanted to add a little zip to them. I got it in pretty good shape, and I was pretty happy with it, and then I let it sit for a little bit, a few days. And when I came back to it, I made some more adjustments. And then I decided that I was going to lay in some music. Now, Photomagico is fabulous for the visuals, and I created a really good visual track. The audio tools, I need a little bit more for the kind of movies that I make. So I wanted to move it into something else. So what I did then, I exported out of Photomagico a 720 by 480 movie, which was going to be the size, you know, my master size. I exported out at high quality, and then I opened iMovie HD, which is another application that I like, and I imported the video track that I had created in Photomagico. Now, the reason why I did that, because in iMovie, I have two audio tracks to work with, and I can do a lot of stuff with them. I have audio effects. I can overlap tracks. I have really good volume control. And if you listen to the audio track for 30 Miles East of LA, you can hear where I, you know, bring the music down when I do the voiceover, and then when a segment of voiceover is finished, then I bring the music back up, and things like that are really a snap to do in iMovie. So I put the Photomagical video track in iMovie, and then I cut in the music. And I actually use three different three different music tracks that I had salvaged back in 2004 when I was digitizing the stuff. And I pretty much got it the way that I wanted. It wasn't complete yet because I hadn't done the voiceover. Voiceover was sort of the final step in terms of adding content. So one thing that I like about iMovie is that I can plug in my audio interface. I use a M-Audio Fast Track, a USB interface with a microphone. And I can plug that right into my USB port and then tell iMovie to use this for audio input. And what's really cool about iMovie is then when you hit the record button, you know, for the microphone, it starts playing the movie. And it's very easy to do voiceover because you can just do voiceover as the movie is playing in front of you. So, you know, I did a number of dry runs. And what I do is I just write my voiceover lines, the basic lines I'm going to use on cue cards and little scraps of paper. And I line them up in front of me. And then as the movie's playing, I just refer to them and just read the voiceover into the mic. And it's really, really handy. It's a great way to do voiceover for your movies because you're just doing it right there in real time. And you can monitor it with your headset or earphones or whatever you want to do. So I got the voiceover down, and it went pretty fast. I practiced for about 30 minutes, and then I just did it the real thing. And I had to do, you know, two or three takes on the segments. But once I got them down, I thought they worked pretty well. And then it's just a matter of adjusting the different volumes, making sure that the voiceover was loud enough, you know, that could play over the background music, and making sure that the background music was low, you know, reduced. So the volume was reduced when I was doing the talking, and then would bring it back up when I wasn't talking and let the two have interplay. So now you have, you know, the music that's timed to the images. You have the voiceover that's timed to the images. And then you have the interplay between the voiceover and the music. Now, it sounds, you know, kind of complicated when I spell it out that way. But the fact of the matter is that it really becomes intuitive while you're working on it. Now, one of the hidden controls in iMovie is, you know, how do you control these different volumes? And if you control click on an audio track, you'll get the pop-up menu, and one of them is allows you to set volume controls. And then you can actually click on different areas in your audio track, and it sets marker points, which you can move up and down. And once you get the hang of it, it's really quite easy. So I got the whole thing put together in iMovie. And one thing I'll say is that when you get to a point when you're working in iMovie or Photomagical, either one, make sure you save. Save often, because if I didn't have any crashes, but I have in the past had things crash on me every now and then, and you don't want to lose an hour's worth of work because it'll just break your heart. So whenever I would do something like lay down a voiceover or get an audio in place just the way I wanted it, I would save, and then I would go on to the next thing. So once I got everything set up in iMovie and played it back and watched it in iMovie and was happy with it, then I exported a high-definition master. And this master was, this one's at 720 by 480, and so it's a good size to put on DVD, which is where this particular version of the movie will end up. And so I export it out, and then that way I can watch it in QuickTime after everything's been rendered and see how it plays out. Now, most of the time, it plays out slightly different than what I heard in iMovie. And everything's in alignment. That's not a problem. But the relationships, the audio relationships, sometimes seem a little different after rendering. So, then I go back into iMovie. I make a few adjustments to the audio tracks, mainly trying to get them balanced with each other better, and then render another high-def version. And usually by the second or third time, it's pretty much what I want. So now I have a high-definition master that I can put on DVD and watch on set-top players. But this size is a little too big for web serving. And that's one of the reasons why for the Photomagical Slideshow Showcase, I wanted a maximum size of 400 pixels in any directions, because you start getting up into 640 and 720 and you end up with pretty large files. So what you do is you don't remaster the output that you just did. You don't recompress that. I go back to iMovie, go back to my original source, and now I change the export parameters and I render out something that's 400 pixels wide. And this is one of the points that I want to make, that you always want to go back to your master files. Whether you're in Photomagical or you're in iPhoto or you're in iMovie or you're in Final Cut Express, whatever you're using, always go back to your original files to render out the different versions. So this time, now I rendered out something and I reduced the quality settings and made some adjustments so I'd have a smaller file. And I like the H.264 codec, because even though it takes a while to compress, the final results are really nice. And then I use AAC for the audio. So then I rendered out something that, and always check the box when you render out Internet Fast Start, because that's really important. And I would say one of the things that I noticed when I was judging the entries to the slideshow showcase was that a lot of people don't have Internet Fast Start, which means then you have to wait for the whole thing to download before it automatically starts playing. Whereas if you have Internet Fast Start, you can, the movie will start playing as soon as there's enough information, and you don't have to wait for the whole thing to download. So it's really a handy thing, and something that I recommend that you always do on your final export. So that's it for now. Go enjoy those slideshows. Think about what you're going to do. And next month for July, we're going to have a new photo assignment. And I'm thinking, because it's the middle of summer, why don't we do heat? Doesn't that seem like a good photo assignment for July? So go out there, take some pictures, and share them with folks. Okay, that'll do it for now. Bye-bye.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.